This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode is brought to you by Ocean Thinkers, a social enterprise on a mission to inspire the next generation to learn more about our ocean and make an impact. Through events, apparel, and the membership-based Ocean Thinkers Club, this mum-led initiative is all about helping children tackle ocean conservation head on. You can shop their beautiful limited edition apparel range and join the Ocean Thinkers Club now at oceanthinkers.com.au.
When I was a young uni student trying to create a folio of writing work, I had a little blog where I interviewed creatives. One of the first people I had on that list to interview was Bella McGoldrick. The piece was titled There's Something About Bella. And more than 10 years, some career plot twists, countless cities, and a set of twins later, I can confirm that there's still something about Bella McGoldrick. This is such a fun conversation. You'll hear about the time she was deported from her husband's home country and told she was never allowed back. How she felt when she found out she was having twins, what it's like to run her business with her husband, the identity shifts she's faced in the world of art as a mum, and how she's built such a successful business as an artist. I'm Lucinda. This is Ready or Not. And here is the cool, kind, and charismatic Bella McGoldrick. Bella, you're in your first trimester, and I think everyone has that moment of thinking, what if there's twins in there? And they go off to a scan, and most of us will find just one single baby in there. Some of us will get the surprise of twins. Talk me through what happened when you found out.
Yeah, it was really crazy. So Ty, my husband, has always wanted twins, and he would always say it. And I was like, okay, there's no twins in the family. Like, it's definitely not happening. There's no genetic thing happening. So like, quit wishing for it. And then when we went in there, I mean, well, firstly, I thought I had a miscarriage because I had like crazy, crazy cramps when I found out I was pregnant, which was like 4 weeks until the scan. It was like, I was in Paris at the time. And yeah, I was like, okay, this is for sure a miscarriage. So when we went in, I was kind of preparing myself like, okay, maybe there's no heartbeat and just prepare for that. And then the woman kind of like gasped a little bit, like not a major thing. And I was like, okay, yeah, there's no heartbeat. It's fine. And then she was like, oh, you've got two. And I just like burst out laughing. I was like, there is no way. Ty has been wishing for this and now we have it. Like that just doesn't happen. But we were stoked. We were like so excited. And then when I got out, I called my mom and she like started crying, but not in like the happy tears. She was like, no. Like, oh my God, it's terrible. And I was like, no, this is good. Like, this would be great. But yeah, my sisters were the same. They're both older than me and have children. And they were like, no, like this is the, like, it's going to be so hectic. But I was stoked. So yeah, it was kind
of weird. I love that. So there was no sense of fear from your end, even though everyone was obviously like, that could have led you down a fear path, but you were like, nah, this is great.
For sure. Yeah. I felt that like the whole time. I feel like it's so lucky. I'm like, this is just like the chances aren't very high. So they're identical twins. So it's just like a fluke happening. And yeah, I think twins are the best. And it did make me like kind of selective who I was talking to or who I was listening to. Cause like, obviously it can be like such a shock. And especially if you have like other children and then you're going for one more and you've got two more. But for me, I was like, this is, we want like more children. So it's a 2 for 1.
It's so fun. I sort of wish that happened to me hearing you talk about it.
Yeah.
I always have this theory that like quite brilliant people have twins. And when our mutual friend Lemo told me that you're having twins, I was like, of course, Bella McGoldrick's having twins. That makes sense to me. Speaking of, let's take it back to your life pre-kids. Started with fashion from memory of knowing you growing up. And that led you to some pretty amazing places. You leave school. Talk us through what happens over the next decade or so.
Yeah. Yeah. So I studied fashion design at RMIT in Melbourne. And then I always was like, I'm going to New York. Like it probably started from Sex and the City or something, but I was like, I am moving to New York. That's it. And then I tried to do exchange in New York. Didn't get into Parsons, New York, and got into Parsons, Paris. So I did exchange in Paris. And that was where I was the first time I was like, damn, like a place can really influence you and like really inspire you. And so, yeah, I loved that. And then I straight after university moved to New York and was like, I'm going to be a hotshot designer. Like, this is it. And well, no one would like hire. I mean, no one would pay me. They were like, oh, you can intern for free for 6 months. And I was like, what do you mean? I can't afford that. Like, nobody's paying for this. So I did kind of odd jobs. I became a curtain designer, which I would just call a designer at the time. Really, I was like just making curtains. And then, yeah, and then like eventually I was in between jobs and I'd done these like fashion illustrations throughout university. So they were like super like runway style, but then I'd make the face look like whoever was ordering them. So they're like portraits and but you're all like glamorous. So I was selling those all throughout university and like making a bunch of money from it. I realized that, yeah, I guess I could just, they kind of became a trend thing. So I was selling those. That's what afforded me to be able to go to New York, was selling those drawings. And then when I was in between work in New York, I was like, okay, maybe I'll just try selling drawings again. But I was kind of over the fashion illustration. I started doing still life. And I just posted on Instagram and was like, I'll draw whatever you want for $100. And then from there, that was in 2018. And then that's just what I've been doing ever since. Just got like more confident being able to do bigger drawings and like then stopping taking commissions and doing my own thing and selling those. And yeah, and then I lived in New York City for like 6 years and then moved to Colorado in the mountains and then got deported and banned for life. And so I had to leave.
Why did you get deported? Are you allowed to tell us?
Yeah, I wrote a book about it. So I wrote a book called Visa Issues, which is because I had sponsored myself. Well, really from when I started drawing, which was like, yeah, 2018, until I got deported, which was like 2021. Was it? Yeah. Or recently, 2022. And I was kind of like on different visas, kind of like trying to make it work whilst drawing. And then this last one I had sponsored myself, set up the company. I thought it was a loophole or a gray area and they thought it was fraud. So they stopped me at San Francisco Airport and was like, you're banned for life, which is, I think I had something coming, like it wasn't totally legal, but like a lifetime ban seems intense.
It seems dramatic.
My husband's American. Yeah, really dramatic.
Oh my God, your husband's American. I didn't even put two and two together. So that's actually would have been really upsetting. Did it feel really dramatic at the time? Like what went down?
Oh my God, like the most dramatic. I was like having a panic attack. Like we bought a place in Colorado. So we owned a place there. I thought I was being all above board. Like I just paid all these taxes and the company was like, I thought legitimate. And I thought I was just like going in for second screening and like, oh, we're just going to have a few questions. Like it's fine. And then they held me for 18 hours and like sent me back and I could never go back.
What happened next? I imagine then there weren't plans to move back to Australia if you'd bought in Colorado.
Yeah.
So that totally changed it.
Everything. Yeah. I think eventually we both wanted to like raise kids in Australia. To have that option is pretty cool. Like, especially having American friends and they were always like, you get the option to like raise kids in Australia. You should definitely take that. So that was like long-term, but not then. No, we were just kind of, work was kind of taking off and like in the American market. And yeah, so it was pretty crazy. And then so Ty didn't have his Australian residence yet or permanent residence. And I couldn't be in the US and he had a job that he had to be in like US hours. So then for like 18 months, we just traveled. We were just like around from like Canada to Mexico to the Caribbean to like, yeah, like we just had no home for a while.
And did you just take your work with you? You just did work wherever you went?
Honestly, yeah, that was like my best work has come from that time. So, yeah, it's interesting. And like if I didn't, I wouldn't be an artist if I didn't do these kind of dodgy visas. So it's just like, it's classic. Like I wouldn't be here if that didn't happen. I definitely regret doing it with a lawyer. Yeah.
I swear it's the same as the twin thing. You just... interesting things happen to you because you're an interesting person. I want to take you back before I take you forward. It's one thing to sort of say like art funded me and that's what sort of kept me going, but that's really hard to do. What do you remember as sort of the turning point of when you're like, oh, I can make some money, like good money out of this, when you start to really sell those commissions? And what do you think from like a marketing and brand point of view actually helped you get there?
Well, the work has always been like not going to art school, I don't think I would be doing this if I went to art school, because for me, the work has always been like tight with getting paid. So like it was kind of a necessity. I was like, I need to get paid. And that it's been commercial the whole time. And it's not, it's less of like, you know, this is my like deep fiery passion that I have to like show the world, and more of like, I need to live in New York City and like, this has got to be my job. So that's been like a real drive and still is today. I think it's a different sort of career than other artists, because I don't work with a gallery and, you know, I sell prints and just doing things a little bit differently because it is a job, and like I've always seen it like that. So I've always been like definitely putting things out. I'm like a done is better than perfect kind of person. And like, so I would just show everything and be like, okay, like who wants this for $50? Or instead of like not showing things and holding them back. And I think in terms of marketing, people really relate to that. There's like a scrappiness. And if you bought something 4 years ago and bought something today, like they look very different. The quality has gotten way better because I've been able to grow instead of trying to make it perfect at the start. Like at the start, it was so scrappy at the start. It was just like me drawing on a piece of paper and like rolling it up and sending it out. Yeah.
Do you think that without even realizing it, sort of adopted that community building sort of behind the scenes side to how a lot of creators operate now?
Yeah, for sure. And just like speaking to everyone who's ever bought something. Like it's just, again, without being with a gallery, like I get to speak directly to people. And for me as a buyer of stuff, like that feels way better. So I just assume to the people who buy my stuff, that must feel better for them. They're like just going directly to the source. And I think art is often bought for, with like this whole story behind it. And that makes like a more interesting story.
Yeah.
People feel like more attached.
So then you're on this wild trip after being deported from the country where your husband lives. I think it's maybe at some stage of this journey that you fall pregnant, but maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Talk to us about when you actually found out you were pregnant.
We were trying after we kind of had it booked like 18 months. And so maybe, I'm not sure when we started trying, but we're still like in this trip. And so, and I actually had a miscarriage. The first time I fell pregnant, I had a miscarriage, which it was only earlier. It was like 5 weeks or something. But, and then, so then we waited a little bit longer. And then I fell pregnant within like, I think there was a month left of the trip. And so, but it was interesting timing. By that time, I was like over it. And I was pregnant. I was having these crazy cramps and stuff. Like we were in Japan and then in Paris. And now I'm like, I just do not want to go back to Paris. Like I had a terrible time in Paris, like just pregnant. And I'd been on the road for so long. I was like, I just want to go home. And like now I'm so ready to like land and settle and nest. And so the timing was really good. Like I think if that first pregnancy went through, it would have been like a pretty rough first trimester, rougher than they already are. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we know that you were very happy to find out that there were two babies in there. Talk to us then about pregnancy. I think as soon as you come to Australia, you make roots up in New South Wales.
Yeah.
Talk to us about how that pregnancy went alongside work, and then also how that made you prepare for what work would look like as someone that worked for themselves.
Yeah. The pregnancy was, it was actually really good. Like, yeah, I loved being pregnant. Yeah, it just felt great and natural. And I liked like watching my body change. And obviously there's like, you know, you go through all the waves of it, but it was like by the time of the third trimester, I was like just getting pretty big. And then I was like a cube. Their bodies were so pronounced. So there was like kind of one body here, one body here. And it was this cube. And I was like, it's so uncomfortable. But yeah, so we had landed in Byron Bay and we had like got an Airbnb for the first month to kind of get our bearings. And then we got another rental and it was just really slow, which was really nice. Like we didn't know anyone here. So kind of an interesting time to make friends when you're pregnant because you're like so in a transition. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not like the single child-free people. And then I'm not like a mum yet. So yeah, just kind of an interesting transition time. And we just took it really slow. And then I was able to work until like I literally couldn't touch the table because my belly was like, I couldn't reach over it. So I was drawing all the way through. And then that's actually when we started. At the tail end, I was like just writing a lot. I just like sit with my laptop and start writing. And so that's when we made this book. And that was actually great because we did that like when for the first 3 months after they were born as well. So Ty works with me and we work on the business together. And he's got like a perfect skill set for it because he was a product designer doing like working with big tech companies. And now he does with the website and with the book, he did like the whole editing and layout. And so because they just slept so much when they were born. So you kind of, it's so funny, you have like this time blocked out being like, we're off, you know, maternity leave and the babies. And then there's just, I just found there was so much time being like, okay, like, what do we do? Like they're asleep. And because they were born 37 and 5. So at the start, they just, we'd have to like wake them up and feed them and they would just be sleeping. So then we just, I was writing and Ty was editing. And so we wrote this book, which was like a really cool way to have something to do, but there was no like timeline or pressure. It was just something to do for those hours. And then when they were waking up more, you know, there was no pressure. We just like didn't have to do more of that. So yeah. And I mean, I'm just so grateful because Ty didn't have to like run off to work. We've got like the perfect job to have twins because it's just a full-on two-person job. So, you know, the people who do it whilst their like partner is at work, I don't understand. Like it's definitely, we're on all the time, the two of us. So yeah, it was a perfect job for that.
So then did that give you some comfort going into it? I'm thinking of you late pregnant, wondering how you'll keep your business running alongside the twins. Did you feel like you were going to have a pretty good setup knowing that your husband worked with you and that you were, I assume you just work from the home 24/7 then?
Yeah, for sure. Like, again, yeah, it's just like the perfect setup and we're like just lucky to be able to have that and work from home. And we also prepared to have, so you, I usually work in collections and launch like 3 to 4 a year. And we're prepared to do like maybe at three, I think it was at 3 months to release an archive collection. So it was the prints we release and then they sell out and we never bring them back. And so this was like the perfect like maternity leave kind of sale because we didn't have to do anything, which is like all the old works, put them on sale. And then that was like our cash inflow or like income for those months. And so that was like a great thing to have planned. We planned that like earlier in the pregnancy to be okay. I don't need to be drawing or having a collection to keep us going. We can have that. Yeah.
So then you're selling the book. And also at some stage, I imagine you start to get back into drawing. What does your actual sort of more official return to paid work look like? When do you start to do it? And how did that go? Because I imagine also that's when babies start to wake up a bit more and start to give you more. And you're all of a sudden like, hang on, we're on a pretty good thing. And now you actually need a lot from me, but also I need to start working again. So how did you go with all of that?
I guess the sleeping all the time kind of stopped, I don't know, maybe like 3 weeks or a month after they were born. And then I went back to work or started drawing again, which is really not like going back to work because again I'm just like in the other room drawing. And that was at 3 months, and that's when we got like a nanny to come and hang out with them a few hours a day for like, yeah, I think it was maybe 5 hours 3 days a week. And it was perfect because I was still breastfeeding, so I would just go into the other room, breastfeed, and then she would hang out with them in the other room whilst I like started drawing again. It was kind of slow, and then I was building up for a collection and it got a bit more, and that's when Ty started. He would just be like doing childcare more whilst I was drawing. Yeah.
What was his experience like with that? Because it can be interesting when the roles are reversed and a lot of mums in sort of mum-dad relationships can see the partner getting frustrated with the very things that maybe they were frustrated with when they might have been the more primary parent, or like in your example as the breastfeeder, obviously things naturally fall a little bit more on you. Was it interesting working out the relationship dynamics both as business people and as partners to these kids?
Yeah, for sure. And like we're still going through it, and he's going through it for sure because like, you know, he was like doing really well working in tech and then gave that up because this was becoming like bigger and he could do a lot with that. And I think he finds that more fulfilling. He like does a bunch of different roles, but it does mean he, during the moments, like I've just launched a collection. So coming up to that, I'm like drawing more and more, and he's definitely taking more of the childcare. And so it's definitely like we talk about a lot because he, at some points he's like, you know, is this like what I'm doing now. Like, I used to kind of be kind of not like a hot shot, but, you know, like good at his job and into his career. And now he's just kind of hanging with babies a lot of the day. And yeah, I think that's been, yeah, like a whole interesting kind of new thing to go through with him. And we're now at, they're almost a year. And so I think actually recently it's been more difficult than ever. I think just now that they're just doing, needing more and like crawling, and they just need a lot more of us. And so I think we're trying to kind of figure out what the next thing is, because we've also like had no independence, like the two, like no exercise or going to a class, or he surfs and he hasn't surfed. And so it's been good. And we've had a year of being like, okay, this is what we're doing. You know, it's like babies and work, which like we love, like I love working. And now I think, you know, it'd be nice. Actually, my mum, we've just invited her. She, like today the movers are here and she's moving in to our, we have a granny flat. So we're now thinking like, okay, she's here. It's been a year. I think I'm up for like seeing the next version of this, of like, what does that mean? Do we need, maybe are we looking at daycare or like more care, or having her is just going to be amazing. Just like extra hands, just for like, if I want to go for a walk by myself, there's been like no by yourself time. And I think that's the thing with twins, is there's no handing it off, because like there's two. So, you know, yeah, you can have one each all the time.
Talk us through a day in the life then. I want to know like everything from when you wake up in the morning to when you go to bed at night. Of, let's like just say arguably your busiest day of the week with work. What is it actually like with twins? I'd love to know.
Yeah, so we wake up at like six around, and they have separate rooms, which I don't know any other way. Like they, I don't know how we could have done it without separate rooms. So they'll wake up around the same time at six. We usually kind of bring them into our bed and hang out for like, I don't know, half an hour, until they're like really hungry. And then we'll go downstairs and feed them a bottle. And lately they are not wanting to sleep in their cots. I don't know, it's a new thing.
Stunning.
Yeah, so we're like going for a walk, or Ty does a lot of driving. So actually probably current day routine, we'll give them a bottle, hang out for a bit, and then maybe at like eight, he'll put them in the car, go for like an hour and a half drive. He knows like the whole hinterland now. He'll go for an hour and a half drive, I'll work, and then he'll come back and we'll probably have a nanny starting like at 11. And so she'll take them, he'll get to work, and then she'll finish at about four. And so, yeah, I'll just be working that whole time. And then we hang out for a bit, like all together, then we'll feed them at like 5:30, and then bath. And we kind of just do it together. We've done it like when one does one, but it feels more like a job when one person does it. And when we both do it, it just feels a bit more fun. So we kind of like do it together. So we'll feed them at like 5:30, bath them at like 6:30, and then give them a bottle, and then both take one and put them down, and hopefully they go to sleep at like seven.
Yeah, hopefully. Let's all pray that they sleep each night. God, Posey doesn't sleep that well at the moment. I'm interested to know, because I hate the term mum guilt, but it does seem to manifest differently in us than it does the dads in mum-dad relationships. Hopefully not all the time, and hopefully you'll buck this trend for me. I wouldn't be surprised if you did. When Ty is having one of those periods where he really feels like he's taken on the lion's share of sort of the household stuff and the kids stuff, how does it sit with you? Like, are you sort of in the next room feeling a bit stressed and like you need to get through that work because he's the one with the kids? Or are you pretty good at going, no, I'm the one that actually creates out of the two of us in this business. I'm the one that has to draw. This is just what has to be done for us to make some money.
Yeah, I think it's, I get the mum guilt of loving working. You know, of like not having guilt, maybe it's the guilt of not having the guilt.
There's always like, some guilt. It's either the guilt, right? Of the guilt, like, or the guilt of no guilt.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So like I really, you know, I think I'm better when I'm able to work and then hang out with them. And like when I'm just hanging out with them and can't work, then I feel like I'm not my best. So I think with him, yeah, definitely takes, like if he's taking them out, I'm not like dallying around. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to make these hours count for sure. And that's like what it is with having a nanny. I'm like, okay, I'm paying for these hours. Like I'm not sitting on Instagram or anything. I'm working. But like, would I want the roles reversed? No, which is interesting, because I think I know of like other women who, yeah, don't want to be working, and I totally get it, but that's not me. And I mean, again, it's not like a labor intensive job. Like I'm drawing. So it's, you know, I'm very like lucky to have that, but I do really like to have both.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a thing like when we were, you know, planning on when I was pregnant and talking about it. And it now feels, I think what makes me feel good about it is like none of this works. Like none of this family and or like our life is going to work if I don't draw. Like that's the business. So that kind of makes, I think, both of us feel better. And like Ty loves to not have a boss, and like his job is really fulfilling. So he is happy to take on a bit more childcare during those more intense months. And it's not all the time. It's just like maybe like four. I mean, we've only had a year, but it's just, we have four collections. So maybe it's like a month before each collection. And yeah. And so we're both like, we've got a pretty chill lifestyle, and like, we like this place that we live. So that has to be a top priority. Like I have to do it.
I've never thought about this until now when I was preparing for this interview, but I'm sure that you've noticed that because you're drawing and a lot of the time you're not on a laptop or, as you say, scrolling or tempted to scroll, there's probably something very meditative in your work and what you're doing when you're stepping away from parenting, which can be quite mundane and intense, even though we love our kids. Have you noticed that? Like, do you feel like you're getting free mental health from drawing and sitting there drawing and creating something?
For sure. And it's the whole thing as well. Like, being able to, the drawing itself, yeah, and I listen to audio, it's like, man, this is so nice. Like, I could, because
I'm jealous. I wish I could draw.
Like, it's not, when I'm painting or doing something else that takes a bit more like thought, but the drawing is just like, I draw what I see. And so I can like, I listen to audiobooks and it's like, yeah, really nice. But then also the thing about the practice, it's like just so mine without trying to, that sounding selfish, but like, it gives me a lot of like autonomy, and this is what I was kind of concerned when I was pregnant, because like it feels like kind of this is who I am. I can do this. I don't need anything else. And like it, yeah, it makes me feel good in that sort of way. So I kind of get back to being like, this is who I was before. And like everything has changed, of course, when you have children, but that hasn't. Like yeah. That's the constant. And that got me through like the times when I was deported or when I was like everything, it's taken me through, and it's this constant through my life that kind of centers me maybe, or just brings me back to like who I am.
When you were thinking about that when you were pregnant, was part of you worried about what creativity would look like post kids? Like, did you worry that, I don't know, that your inspiration might change or your ability to sort of make work might change?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was excited because I had heard or read or just like spoken to people who said it definitely changes, but it brings you like a whole new lease of inspiration. So I was excited. But interestingly, and I'm again still going through this now, the works were very tied to travel before. Like we would go to a place and I'd make a collection from this place. And we had actually booked a trip to Europe for this year because we're like, we were thinking about it last, every year we're like, okay, we're going to go back, go to the, like, we're going to spend a month in Greece and make like a Greek collection. And so that was booked this year, and we get closer to it and it's like, absolutely not. Like, this is not going to happen. We're not taking the twins over there, and like, they probably won't like it and they're only one. And so that, I'm still dealing with that of like, okay, so now what are these collections going to be? I've got to find this inspiration in other places, like without travel. And travel's pretty easy. Like it's pretty easy to be able to go somewhere and like be inspired. So yeah, so that's changed.
I'm interested to know then if the idea of motherhood or family sort of injecting itself into your work, is that an area that you sort of don't want to go into because this piece of work, this part of your life does feel like yours, as you were saying? Like, are you like, nah, I'm not bringing motherhood into this. This is mine.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. I never really been asked that or thought about that so much, but I don't know if it's struggled. This is actually why I loved listening to your podcast, this podcast, because I've had an interesting time trying to find like the space that I kind of want to be like included in with motherhood, or see people that I'm like, that's me, or I relate to that. Like, yeah, because it's not full motherhood and it's not full boss lady career thing. It's like somewhere in between. And I've been trying to find, and have had some luck, but like finding some like-minded people who are kind of figuring it out and still, yeah, seeing where my identity is to have children. And that's like such a huge part of my life and I love it. But then not just that, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because I don't think this is something we would outwardly say that much, but art is like this very cool and inspirational thing. And sometimes I feel like we think motherhood is quite fuddy-duddy, especially before we do it. It's like, oh, I don't want to be like my mum. Don't want to sound like my mum. Have you noticed that? Like, have you come a bit full circle like me? I've definitely now at a point where I'm like, I am a mum and I'm okay with that. But I think there's a period of taking time to get there.
Totally, totally. And I was listening to you, I can't remember which one it was, when talking about like, you always wanted to be a mum, and like that wasn't cool to say, to be like, I want to be a mum. So yeah, it's I'm definitely still in it of finding, and it's just kind of, I think, trying to give yourself the confidence to be like, I'm going to be both. Like, okay, and there are so many women who've done it before us, but if I can't think of one immediately, I'll be like, well, I'll just do it, you know, someone's going to do it. Yes. But then you start looking and there are so many, right? It's just like, you don't really look for that when you're not a mum. There's just like so many incredible mothers who are doing so much and they're so inspiring, and I just need to kind of find out where they are, you know, find them. Yeah. But that's why this podcast is so great, because you get to like see other women doing motherhood differently.
Oh, thank you. That's a lovely call out. I'm interested then to get to the sort of community building thing that you had to go through. As you said, it was a really weird period. You were a mum in the sense that you were pregnant, but you didn't have your children yet. You've moved to this new community. How did you actually find your people?
Well, still finding, for sure. So, well, I know it takes time, and I've moved a lot, that I know friendship, it just takes time to find the right people. Oh, when I was pregnant, I was like going to Pilates every day just really to make friends. And I would go there early and like sit there. Everyone was like an in out, and I'd sit there, be like, hi, hi, like waiting there early, trying to make friends. And then there was this one girl who was pregnant and she was like away in the class on the other end. And I was like, oh my God, like, I think we could be friends. So I like hounded her after ran after her after the class and was like, basically was like, oh, you're pregnant, I'm pregnant. Like, I need pregnant friends. And then she was like about to give birth the next day, basically. So then she was great. She was like, yeah, you know, like about to give birth. So she kind of, you know, did her like 3 months of just being in the bubble. And then I gave birth and had my kind of 3 months of being in the bubble. And then 6 months later, she messaged, she was like, I really think we should hang out. And she's great. And so she's one of my really good friends, and she's a film producer, and like just similar vibes of like, you know, we'll be us and have babies kind of thing. So yeah, she's great. And I've met some other great people as well, but it has been I think something's got to give when you have baby, or like, I mean, everything in a way, but for me, it's definitely been the social life aspect. Like that's just, work's been going great, and that's really cool that we are able to do that. And obviously family life is now going well, and it's just the social life is just kind of by the wayside. Like obviously nights are just off, and then, you know, you're trying to keep up, and then you just realize like, nah, this like isn't that good, you know, like, oh, I'll still come. And then you go and you're like, yeah, sorry, nah.
Yeah, I stretched myself too much and now I feel like shit.
Yeah, like they're not having fun and so I'm not having fun, or like, you know, we've tried to travel just a little bit within Australia, and every time we're like, why are we doing this? Like we're paying all this money to stay in a hotel, which with two babies just like doesn't work. And we're sitting in the dark with two babies screaming. And I'm like, honestly, like, nah.
I totally hear you.
Yeah. So again, with hopefully now having my mum here, maybe there's more of a chance of like going for a dinner, or I don't know, something a bit more social. But that the social life is definitely just like kind of on a standstill.
Yeah, I imagine then that it probably feels like you and your partner both haven't had, as you mentioned already, space for much like surfing or going for a walk or any of that, but also not much space to connect on things that have nothing to do with business and have nothing to do with your kids. Is that something you're craving, to like be just the two of you again, even if it's for an hour dinner while your mum has the kids?
Honestly, no. I think that like our relationship is going really well, and I think, yeah, we're just together like all the time. And so, and we work well like that. Like when we started working together, you know, people are like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, no, we're together all the time anyway. Like it just works. So I feel, although in saying that, no, yeah, I mean, going out and doing something with us would be amazing for sure. Just to be like free for sure, but I don't feel like the relationship so much
has suffered needs or anything.
I think we as individuals need it. So it's either like we could go by ourselves or go together, whatever, but just to be like child free for sure. Yeah.
What do you think has kept some of the tension out of the intensity of working and parenting together? Because I feel like there'd be a few people out there who do both together who say we need X, Y, and Z to keep the relationship sort of happy because that's a lot of time together. You obviously sort of don't fall into that category. So I'm interested, what do you think it is that makes it work?
Yeah, well, like we're so committed, again, with how I said the, you know, without the drawing, none of this works. And we have agreed, like, without this relationship, like, none of this works. The, our relationship with the kids don't work. Like, that is above the boys. It's, like, got to be our relationship first. And so just, like, the normal, just communicating a lot and just being aware kind of each other. Like, after, you know, I might be like, okay, you need to just go on a bike ride and just, I got the boys, you need to go and do that and be by yourself. Yeah, I think just communicating and, like, putting each other always, actually the one rule we've got is like, if babies are crying, the fight means nothing. Like that, nothing said means anything. It's just like that, we ignore that and move on. Cause if a baby's crying, like we're not in the headspace to be like having a chat.
Yes. So I'm going to take that to heads. Actually, that's a really good rule.
Yeah.
Don't, cause like it always,
you know, a baby's crying and then we start kind of yelling or whatever, and we're getting tense. And it's like, if we go, hold on. Like, just once the baby stops crying, then we can continue this again. Cause like that's, you're so on edge when that's happening.
Yes. I'm interested now to get to your collaboration with Glassons or Glassons. I don't even know how you say that. How did that come to be? That must've been a pretty big project. Talk us through it.
Yeah, it was really cool. They were so great. They contacted us and we get a few of those things. So it's always kind of like very casual at the start. Like, you know, are you serious or what's your budget? And then they, just in the communication, it was like so open. They were like kind of whatever you want. And they'd done one collaboration before. And, or I think at this, they had, were working on one as well. So by the time it came out, they'd done two. And they were just like, I've done other ones before. And it was like just night and day how much they just wanted to use, like, to do whatever I wanted to do, which was amazing, instead of trying to like fit me into this thing that they wanted. And it started in October and it was just, yeah, it was really fun. They just wanted like a few t-shirts. We did the whole like theme and I did two new drawings and then used an existing drawing and then like Ty did all the graphics for it. And yeah, it was great. And we had like a launch lunch in Byron and all of it was just ideal because they kind of were like, you can do as much as you want, but if you get to an area where you want us to take it, then we can do that. And so like for the event, I'm not like an event planner or an organizer. So I was like, oh, I'd love like a lunch in Byron and like you organize it. And I did. And it was great. Yeah.
Amazing. Really fun. So I know you already touched on sort of the behind the scenes stuff and that you talk directly to your audience and that sort of feeling of scrappiness helping you to, I guess, build a bit of community. If an artist today, and we'll say particularly maybe a mum artist, sort of always was drawing or painting in the background, but it was through motherhood that they decided they really wanted to give it a go, what would be your advice for putting yourself out there as an artist?
Well, firstly, to just do it, to start, right? Like just start without it being perfect. I think a lot of people want to like get the branding, the logo, and it's like, nah, like you can change everything. And I think that's the part that like people aren't going to get confused. Or if you already have an Instagram, just start putting it on the Instagram. You don't need a new Instagram like that. And sometimes people are like, oh, but they might get confused. It's like, no, just appeal to your most like intelligent, cultured, you know, viewer, and they're going to get it. And just, yeah. I think just starting with like friends, like if you're wanting to make bracelets and then you're like just giving bracelets for every birthday and every, you know, giving them to your friends and then maybe your friend's mum wants one and then it just goes on from there. Like it just can be, I think, especially today, it can be really small. And like for me, I like love nothing more than if I find like a clothing brand and they're just like making these little whatever t-shirts and it's just one, yeah, they've only got one t-shirt to sell and they're making it. I'm like, oh my God, please. Like, and then it makes people feel, it's almost like when you find like a hole in the wall cafe or something and you're like, I found this. You know, there's something cool about starting small, I think, and just like sharing with the people who already see your stuff. and not trying to be like a big, there's already big brands doing stuff. Like, we don't need to compete with like these huge brands. I think being small is cool.
And what is next for you? What are you planning in terms of collections and anything else that might be in the pipeline?
Yeah, well, I am always in a kind of in a weird headspace because I just launched this on Thursday. So now I'm like, now what? But, and so kind of, we are actually going to Bali and Thailand in June. So I'm thinking that could be, I'm now like, okay, let's make this like Bangkok trip for inspiration and maybe do like some sort of Thai collection. But it's very like in my uncomfortable zone of like, what next? And trying to like source inspiration. And so I do a bit more of that now, just online and like reading and old magazines and stuff, where again, it used to be like so obvious because I would be like, well, I'm in Italy, so we're going to do an Italian collection. And now it's a bit more open, I guess, which I think can be harder when there's like less, you know, less restrictions. Yeah. So, oh, and interestingly, actually, we have been looking at working with an agent, which I've just now gone off the idea. Because I'm like pretty strong and like trying to be an advocate for people to not be with galleries. Like, I think we can just do it ourselves. And I'm like quite big on like, let's not have the middlemen taking their cut. And so then we were looking at working with an agent for more of these kind of like brand collaborations, which I really enjoy working on and working with a team and stuff. And then we had a couple of meetings and I was like, wait, I think this is getting into that same like,
yeah,
I think we can do it ourselves. And so now I might do a bit of like outreach to see if we can do it ourselves, what, like seeing what other brands might be interested in keeping that kind of, I don't know, I'm just quite big on like keeping the, I think we don't need as many middlemen.
Yeah. Well, especially if it's yours and your partner's deal, so you may as well keep the money coming in for the twins that you have.
Yeah. And just the like, I think being direct to the consumer is like powerful.
Yeah.
And that's why podcasts have become so big and like YouTube, and things don't need to be so like polished, I think. It's a bit more raw.
I love the scrappy angle that you've gone with today. I think that's really, really good advice. I'm really glad that you brought up how you feel a little bit weird after launching a collection, because I actually saw a story that I think I screen grabbed to be like, make sure you talk about this with Bella, obviously forgotten till now. And that's that I wonder if that feeling, would you liken it to being early postpartum at all? Like, is it almost like this big thing happens and then you have this sort of drop?
Totally. And I've just been thinking this, as I said, it has been a more difficult time lately, this kind of 11 months, we're hitting a year. And every time, it's the same as postpartum, when you're pregnant, you're like, the birth, we've got the birth. And then you have the birth and you're like, well, now I've got to like look after these babies. Like, I didn't even prepare that. And I feel like that now, where I'm like, oh, I've got like the rest of, like, we're about to hit kind of that toddler age. And I'm like, not even slightly prepared. All I've been thinking about is like newborns. And it is totally similar with the collection, where you're like so, you know, gung-ho on this thing and you finish it and you're like, oh, wow, there's like a lot more to go.
Yes. Oh, I can totally relate to that in a totally different way, because I've never picked up a paintbrush in my life.
No, but with baby, no.
Yeah. I'm interested to know, traveling with twins at the age you're going to do it, I'm not going to pretend that it's an easy age to travel with. It'll be fine and you'll have a great time. It'll be worth it, but it's not necessarily easy. Has anyone given you tips of like how to travel with toddlers specifically?
No, and I think I've had my head totally in the sand about it. But this is one of those things of like this identity thing where I am like determined. Like every time I'm like, we will travel with kids, you know, and this was like classic pregnant, like everything will be the same. But we're like, no, we're going to be the family that travels with kids. And every time we try it, I'm like, eh, not great. And I'm doing it again. We're going for like one of our best friend's wedding. So we definitely like had to go to Bali for this wedding. We already canceled the whole Europe trip, which like we booked everything and we're like, okay, no, we're not doing that. So this feels like a lesser version and it will be interesting. No, I totally stick my head in the sand when people are talking about toddlers. I'm like, oh, it won't be like that for us. No, it won't be like that.
Honestly, I reckon you're better off doing that because you're going to figure it out anyway, so you may as well do it your way.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, I don't know. So maybe I'll have to report back because we'll see. But it is, we're looking at it now being like, that you just can't really stay in a hotel room. Because, like, where are they going? And, like, last time we did it, one was in the bathroom and one was in, like, the bedroom, and we're sitting, closed the doors, but the lights off. And I was like, I can't even have, like, a shower and put on a robe. Like, this sucks. Like,
yeah, what's the point of being here?
Honestly, I'm kind of like, put the robe on. Like, what is the point of being here? So, yeah, we'll see.
Oh, no, you'll find your way. It'll be interesting, but it'll be fun too. Now, we're doing this new thing at the end of episodes where we do like a quick fire round. I won't catch you out here. I did have a question at the end, Paris or New York, but I feel like we've already got the answer of that. It's that you don't want to go to Paris, but you also can't go to New York, which I'm devastated to say because I feel like New York maybe was the answer. Loz is actually going to ask this. Oh, okay. Give us the answer.
The answer that I've come, because I think New York is the best place on earth, Tokyo is the next, like the place that I'm going to replace it with. I feel like it's the closest thing to New York.
Tokyo would be a great collection. Have you ever done one?
I have actually, yes.
Oh, I love Tokyo so much.
That's my like replacement for New York.
Yeah, I think that's a really good replacement. So if anyone's listening, Loz will actually run these when we do in-person interviews, but because we're coming from both Melbourne and Byron today, I'm taking over. So these are either all questions or really short answers. I'll go with the first one. You have a 30-minute lunch break working from home. What are you doing, laundry or resting?
Watching YouTube.
Oh, I love that. I knew you weren't going to say laundry, and I love you for it. You've got a kid-free Saturday night with your girlfriends. Are you going out or sitting on the couch?
Going out.
I thought you'd say that too. If you never had to do one of these things again, what would it be, dishes or laundry?
I'm terrible at laundry. I always get it wrong, but it's easier. But I would never do dishes because there's more of them.
I agree, and they're just fucking always there. Laundry's a bit more satisfying, I think. Like, the end result's nice.
I find it too hard, which is crazy. Like, I'm always putting stripes in the wrong thing. But yeah, I do find it satisfying.
What would you rather skip, dinner and bedtime routine or the breakfast and morning routine?
Dinner and bedtime.
I'm with you there. Hardest thing about making work as a mum?
Babies are so fun when you're hanging out with them undistracted. They become super annoying when you're trying to do something else.
They literally become demonic.
Yeah, I'm like, this is so annoying. I'm busy. And so, like, I have to be able to just be on or off, because trying to do both doesn't work.
I love the way we expect them to realize we're busy now that I'm saying it. I'm like, mum just has to do one thing, right? He's like, I'm three. I don't know what that means. I just need you to look at me.
Totally. And just the like, and you're like, no.
Yeah. Oh, there's nothing more stressful. Biggest partner turn on now that you're a mum?
Well, to do with the babies is when he's singing them to sleep. So cute.
Perfect timing, just when they're about to go to sleep.
Yeah. And then I think it's, so there's the baby part, and then I love seeing him when he's like not a dad. And I'm like, oh, he's still like a hot man. You know, he's still like his own. When I figure out, which happens rarely, that he's like his own person, then I'm like, that's hot.
That's a turn on. Similar sort of theme, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, by the way. What's the one thing you need now that you're a mum to feel in the mood for intimacy?
Time.
That's a good one. Just one word answer, time. Best thing your partner does for you?
He really makes an effort to, like, give me words of affirmation, and which is, like, big for me, and, like, remind or telling me that I, you know, look great, or, you know, likes what I'm wearing, and like the same sort of comments that he would have made before kids.
Yeah. I love that. A compliments guy.
Yeah. Total compliments guy.
My husband is not.
I think I maybe have taught him, because I'm like massive compliments to and fro. That's like my, you know, love language. And so he definitely makes an effort to like give those back to me about like not mum things.
Yeah, that's nice. And in lieu of Paris or New York, I'm going to propose something different. I'm giving you 5 days to go on a kid-free holiday. Let's pretend a world where, like, they're all looked after. You're not feeling guilty or stressed or sad or any of that. You're just excited to go. And let's pretend that every flight is a one-hour flight so that you can go anywhere for 5 days. Where are you going?
See, I'm always, especially from living in Byron Bay, I love a city holiday because it's like low.
I'm the exact same because I'm in Rye. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it would be Tokyo or on a boat in Greece.
Heaven. Oh, would love to be on a boat in Greece. Bella, I've loved chatting to you. For anyone that wants to find you online, where should they go?
Yeah, I'm just Bella McGoldrick on Instagram, and just recently started a YouTube channel that we're working on, same Bella McGoldrick, and yeah, or my website is bella.gold.
I love that, by the way. When I saw your email address, I was like, that's a brilliant email address. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's been so fun. So nice to chat to you, Luz.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.